everybody can just hold on.
Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Bryant, are you in the room? I'll go ahead and ask you to come to the front. You want to sit on the desk to our right or your left? I think I got ahead of you. I think I need you to go to the right side. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Can you send your name and ADC number to the record?
Sure. My name's Steven Bryant, ADC number 068182.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 3144-8 parole hearing to consider regular parole or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. To my far right, at the end of the bench, working toward you, we have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is Honorable Mr. David Neal. And my name is Luigi Norris. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. I will begin this hearing with a summary, and later in the hearing, your supporters and the victims' representatives will have a chance to speak for the court. Mr. Bryant, ADC number 068182, is 51 years old. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
The crime of murder in the first degree occurred on or about August 10, 1987. He was approximately 29 years old at the time of the incident event.
That's incorrect.
Oh, what is it? It's not
20.
20, I'm sorry. I looked at an oversight there when I was reading that. Sometimes I come back from the date of birth.
It's okay.
Thank you for that correction. He was approximately 20 years old at the time of the incident events. He pled guilty on May 3rd, 1988. Was sentenced to life imprisonment on June 6, 1988. Was granted home arrest by this board on January 31st, 2013. And was graduated to regular parole on January 16, 2014. Because we have new board members since your last hearing, Mr. Bryant, I will read a very short summary of the offense, and we'll get into the specifics later. And the reason why it's short, quite honestly, is it's a very lengthy pre-sentence report, not a very concise synopsis of the event. I do appreciate when they're detailed, but it's kind of hard just to read the entire thing to go through. But in short, on or about August 10, 1987, Stephen Lloyd Bryant, Attorney Robert Langstaff, and Julianne Marlene Taylor, with intent to come over and the commission of offense, to wit, first degree murder of Douglas Orton Benson, agreed with each other that at least one of them or another person would engage in conducting and constituting that offense in violation of ARS 13-1003. And several other violations. So that's just accounting for the date and of the event and the fact that there was a murder. According to Mr. Bryant's community corrections officer, he has had consistently a clean UA since 2013. He has successfully completed his counseling, he has paid off his restitution, and has been working for safety services since 2013, only 2 weeks after your release.
Yes.
We have many letters of support for Mr. Bryant, but we also have letters from the victim's representative, as well as representatives in the room today, and a letter from the Yavapai County Attorney's Office strongly opposing absolute discharge. This is his sixth hearing before the board. Mr. Bryant, again, not to go through the entire home arrest control process again, but because this is in the board, can you tell us about the crime that led to your incarceration and why you think you are deserving of absolute discharge? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Pinos. At the time of the crime, I guess the best way to characterized what I was socially immature. I was 20 years old, but I certainly didn't act it. And I had, I think, I wanted to hang on to being a teenager growth. So we met Mr. Benson in Salt Lake City. Myself and the two partners met him in Salt Lake City. And the truck I was driving had broken down, and in exchange for paying for his fuel, he was going to give us a ride down to Phoenix area. We got to Flagstaff, and they had some sort of convention going on at the time, I don't recall what it was. So we ended up getting a campsite for the evening, because that was the only place we could find that was available. The following morning, I'll abbreviate this and leave some of the unnecessary details out. So the following morning, me and Mr. Benson had gotten into an argument. Looking back where I was, it was probably something stupid. I mean, I don't recall the exact subject matter of it. We got into an altercation, and I was getting my stuff. I was making an attempt to get my stuff out of the back of the truck. And I got hit or spun around or, and grabbed a rifle and went off. Now, let me just clarify to the board whether it's an accident or not. I am responsible for the passing of Mr. Benson. Nothing I can do or say is going to soften that. It's not going to make that. So many people were hurt by my actions. And if I could undo it, I certainly would.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. I will continue with the second part of that question, and that is, why do you believe that you are deserving of absolute discharge today, sir?
I don't think deserving is the appropriate word, and I would hope that I can give the board the information it needs to make a decision as well as whether I'm suitable for release from parole. Since I've been released, I've been consistently going to school. I'm expected to graduate at the end of this year with my bachelor's. I've already achieved my associate's degree, and I've actually started pursuing a secondary career, which is an OSHA outreach trainer, which I've already got certified for that, so I can teach me about OSHA safety and whatnot. More drug or alcohol use, I don't know if it's by choice or by fear. I was an alcohol and drug user in my youth, but I've been off of it for so long, it's been sober for almost 42 years now. I sometimes worry if I go to temptation gets to me that you wouldn't do me physically. So I abstained from all that, and like I said, I haven't drank nothing in almost 32 years. No contact with the police. I've always learned how to obey the laws and not be a threat to anybody's community. I'm a member of my community in the sense that I've bought a condo and I've been there for almost 5 years now, in the same residence. That's about the thing at this point. I have additional certifications that didn't make an application that I've achieved since the application was submitted, as far as some more computer technology certifications that come to you. And, the degree I'm actually pursuing right now is Cloud Systems Administration, and whereas a typical class will have a final exam that you have to take, this one required to take an industry certification test. So it's not necessarily about what you know, but actually showing what you know. And I feel that's kind of preparing me for advancement in that career. So, I'll often think of that this time.
Thank you, sir. Any very basic question to consider absolute discharge? And that is, what do you think? think you would gain by graduating from the regular parole to absolute discharge?
I like getting my rights back, as far as the right to vote. I've never voted. And I realize that's not necessary to be a contributing member to society, but that's something that I would like to get back. I need to pursue further counseling. The problem is under current parole system, I can't pursue counseling that involves other parolees, for example, because the parole rule says no contact with anybody on parole. I think there's still some adjustment in there. I mean, sometimes I'll go into a shopping mall where there's a body of people and I have to leave just because it is the crowd. But being off of parole, I think it'll open that up to me to where I can get better counseling on that end of it. I don't have parole issues anymore. You're going to hear from your girlfriend here for a minute. She's been with me for almost 5 years. I don't know if there's a magic answer that I could give you as far as what would I gain. There's certain things I would like to acquire as a result of being off of parole. Whether I'm releasing parole today or not, my life really isn't going to change. I mean, I'm still going to have the same job and all that stuff. I'm still going to seek out every day to become a better person, to continue with my education, to help people have help people that have account to them. I mean, we have ex-felons at work, our parolees, who some days they just don't get it, and I'm more than happy to pull them aside and say, look, this is what you're missing. You know, you need to take deep breaths. Think about what you're trying to do here, and approach it from a different angle. So, but ultimately, I would like to have a right, restored. I mean, I know that's not going to happen today, if you grant it to me. Well, I'd go and see my family, for example. Right now, I have to get a travel permit to the parole office. You know, I'd like to maybe do so without having to have that additional step involved. I don't know if I answered your question.
I think it's fair to state that we will have a script for what you should say in order to speak honestly and from the heart.
Right. And you mentioned that and at my last hearing, obviously Dr. White was the only one at the last hearing 4 years ago. And at that time, I made the statement that I really wasn't comfortable. Sorry, I wasn't really comfortable talking to you guys because I'm always worried. Am I saying the right thing? You know, is there, magic keywords where I explain that I can talk to a group of lifers, prisoners better. I was more comfortable at that time talking to them than I was you guys. And the comment was made, well, why is that? And I explained, you know, I think we're both kind of on edge on both sides of the table here. And once we pass that threshold, you know, that we realize, you know, you're human, I'm human. I have more baggage than what you have, obviously. But we can still talk one-on-one. And once I overcame that, I was a little more comfortable with you guys. I don't think there's a... I can only speak of what I would like to achieve off of parole, but I don't know if there's anything that I can't do today that will be any different as far as... I mean, I still go to work, I still go grocery shopping, that kind of stuff. So I'm not restricted in that means.
I think it's clearly documented that the Delaware County Attorney's Office and Indigenous representatives oppose any graduation.
Right.
And I am not egging this on. But how do you feel about that? I mean, I would think in your journey you would have to consider other people's feelings at this point.
Absolutely. I guess the natural response there would be that I empathize with them, but how can you empathize with something like that? I mean, I took their family member away from them. Every day I look in the mirror, I Dorothy Sharp called myself a complete idiot. It wasn't just, you know, their family. You know, my family's also affected. I mean, I put a lot of people through the ring on this, and that's part of my decision to plead guilty and just to avoid the trial. I can't make their pain go away. And to me, I hear a lot of times in trying situations like this, people will ask, well, I hope the family's forgiveness. Well, I can't ask them to forgive me because of the pain I caused. Maybe their hearts later, you know, down the road, they may. But I can't ask that. Because I think if I was in their shoes, it would be hard for me to forgive. Unfortunately, I haven't had to go through that in my life. I have a few family members who I'm probably going to lose in the next 5 years because of health reasons. But, and that's by no means comparable. But I can't make their day better. I can only go each day trying to see the good in Doug Benson. I didn't really know him that much except for a couple of days. But you know, going through my court paperwork and that kind of stuff and seeing the feedback from the family at that time. Not everyone's bad, and I get that. You know. People have bad days. I mean, I have a bad tax return here this year. Doesn't make me a bad person. I wish there was something I could say that would make. And the reason I'm not facing this because last year I did turn to face him, and I was told I had to address you guys. So no disrespect to him. No disrespect to him. But yeah, no, I don't have a magic sense that's going to make their pain go away. I wish I did. And like I said, maybe in time, I don't know if time will ever heal the wounds of Dr. Carlisle. I can only hope that they will. But I can't say that they will.
Thank you, Mr. Bryan.
I'm going
to ask the board one more question. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Fernandez. Mr. Bryan, there's some, this packet is not clear as to whether the restitution was ever paid. Have you fully paid the restitution?
Yes, I paid before I was.
Okay, so, and do you remember about the amount, the approximate amount?
The total amount was $685 for cremation expenses and other offer for compensation.
Okay, so that's all been taken care of. Okay, because it's not real clear in...
Yeah, he made losses or check. I took it as he paid it or he moved forward and that's
right.
I don't know. Had I known the question came out, I would have received it, so I haven't actually.
Oh, it's okay. I can take your word for it. Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Rittenhouse. Mr. Neal or Dr. Wright?
Well, I guess, Mr. Bryan indicated that I received a rest in 2014, but the last time you came before this board, I was here, and just looking back at the record, it seemed to me that I'd shared the last one. Therefore, I probably asked the same question that I'm going to ask now, and you've already answered it, but I just want to get a little more clarification, Mr. Bryant. I mean, aside from you obtaining your voter's rights and so forth, your citizenship rights, why do you wish, this board has saw fit, I was not on the board at that time, in 14 to move you to, I believe, home arrest, and I think you've been on home arrest, and now you're on supervision. Why is it so important that this board needs to reach out to the next level where you, sir, at this time, sir? In your opinion, I'm not saying whether it's justified or not, but in your mind, why should this board do that, sir?
I got a lot of issues bouncing in my head right now, but I don't think any more right. I think
probably there's no right or wrong, sir.
I think the natural answer would be just to progress that. I don't want to say it's a sign of compliance or anything like that, because anybody can follow the law. and report to the parole officer, make a total report. I think it'll better give you a sense of completion, if that makes sense. Because I'm always going, everyone's in the mirror, I know who I was at 20. I keep talking back to, when I was 20, when you're 20, you really don't give a damn about what the world thinks of you. And looking back, I wasn't aware of all the pain that was caused back then. Even when I was doing the right things, a lot of times I was still causing the pain. By moving from general parole to getting statute discharge, I think it'll give me a sense of recognition by the board. And recognition of the board sees me as a fulfilling the necessary objective of law-abiding citizen, productive member of society, able to distinguish right from wrong, a non-threat to the community. I think it moving to the absolute discharge provides affirmation of that. I don't know if that was the answer you're looking for.
Let me ask another question, Mr. Bryant, and I'll apologize to the victims who are in the room. I don't want to create any emotions, but you were 20 years of age, and I would be willing to admit that that is a young age. But why did you commit a murder at that time? Why did you commit a murder, sir? Why did that happen? I still can't comprehend. What was going on? What was going on in your mind? Why would you? I think that you would recognize that you was committing a crime at that time. Hopefully you did. I can't say that you did, but hopefully you recognize that. But what was really going on in your life at that time for you to do it, sir?
I recognize at the moment the crime happened that the crime had occurred. I think at that point I realized that I had crossed that bridge that you can't go back across. I don't know if I was scared or... And I'm not trying to minimize this, so I don't want to get that impression. But I did commit a very serious crime. I just don't know if I was worth thinking at the time. As far as what the repercussions were, if I do, acts A, B, and C, this is what is going to happen down the road.
Did you have a weapon on you at the time?
No, it was Mr. Vincent's weapon.
Okay, and so how did it get in your hand, and where did you?
I didn't know I actually grabbed a rifle. It was something in the back of the truck, where I was getting my stuff out of the back of this truck. And then, I don't know if he spun me or if he hit me or whatever. I turned around, I was facing him, and in that moment of panic, I reached back to get that rifle. And it didn't really have a rifle at the time, but when it went off, I think at that point the crime had happened. But I wasn't, there was definitely no intention. I don't think I was smart enough, for one thing, at the time to actually plan out a crime.
I know worse than men, and sometimes they do, when it went off, it didn't go off, somebody had to pull something. I don't think it'll go on the whole, and I'm not an expert like some of my colleagues, but they just don't go off. Maybe they do, but I don't think in your case it just went off and nothing happened.
I'm not trying to minimize it.
I know you're not, but I'm just trying to figure out what happened, sir.
I understand that. I don't recall pulling the trigger. Obviously, my hand had to be on the trigger in order for it to go off.
Were you on alcohol or drugs, anything at that moment, sir?
I was not on drugs. We were drinking the night before. I don't know if that would carry over the next day.
At what point in your life, sir, did you feel that you had done something wrong, sir? Did you feel it that same day? Did you feel it 10 days, 10 years later? Or when did you really feel
it? I knew I did something wrong that day. When as far as the life-changing repercussions of it, it was probably about 10 years later, when I was you know, when it finds something, then you're sitting in prison. At 10 years, I was still a young man. I was only 30 years old. And prison is basically a big playground. I mean, community work, which I did, where you sit in your house and watch TV, which a lot of guys do. When I found that there was no more room for, like, job advancement or anything like that in prison, I think when the prison thing finally sunk in, I think is when it realized, when it dawned on me that this is my life now. You know, this whole series of events, like prison, parole, this is who I am.
Now, sir, let me just ask you, this will be my final question at this time. Please convince me, CT Wright, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the board. Why should I vote for absolute discharge? The last time I voted against absolute discharge, that's part of the record. I mean, I can't erase the record. Just that you cannot erase that. I did not vote the last time for you to be granted absolute discharge. Why should I vote different this time in your mind, sir?
In my opinion, I hope that I can convince you. Based on my conduct, post-release, once since I've been back in the community, I've taken 36 weeks of anger management at the suggestion of my parole officer, who I didn't feel I had an anger issue, but looking at my record with a fresh set of eyes, she obviously saw something that I didn't see. I've been going to AA every Sunday since I've been released. Since 2013, I've been pursuing my educational objectives, which is to get my bachelor's degree. I've already got my associate's, and I'm about five classes from my bachelor's right now. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm establishing in my community. I mean, I'm not moving from house to house to house. I don't think I have any bad relations out in the community either. I mean, everybody with me, I'm pretty able to get along with. In fact, I just met two of my other neighbors at that complex the other day that I didn't even know were there. But if you vote to release me from my parole, I can give you my word, based on my past conduct since I've been released, that I will remain a law-abiding citizen of the community. I will continue with my education. I will continue with my treatment, as far as counseling, as far as going to AA. AA doesn't stop just because I'm on parole. That's going to keep going regardless. In fact, several letters I got in my application are from people who have gone to AA, and they're not people you'd find falling down in the house. They're professionals, doctors. One person's a former public defender. She's a retired public defender. I have a letter in there from a former member of your board who I sat at length with her on the phone and just talked with her, and she saw in her opinion that she felt that I would be a good candidate for absolute discharge. I'm not saying that you guys have to release you for one thing. I think I'm a good candidate to be released from the role. And with that, I hope that what you're presented with today will convince you that I deserve your release from absolute. I deserve to have an absolute discharge for him.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Gordon, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Bryant, I think if you just want to have a seat right there behind you, we'll begin to hear from your supporters. We have two people in the room today. Will you both be speaking?
Yes.
Okay. Who would like to come first? Ma'am?
Hello, my name is Tracy Leach. I am his girlfriend.
And who would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
I want him released so that he can go to California and help me with my mother. My father passed away about 2 years ago, and I've been getting sick, and he's healthier than me. But my mom, she needs support of a man's, of a guy. I don't have brothers. It's only me and my sister. And I've been wanting him to come to California, but it's hard because he can't stay in California to help out. He has to come back to Arizona the same day. And I feel that he's been good. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's been good to me. I've been with him for 4.5 years now. And I got really sick. I caught the flu. And he helped my daughter. Helped my daughter through the situation that I put on her because I almost died. And he helped her. So I think he would be okay to be free.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm going to ask my fellow board members, do you have any questions? Thank you, ma'am. And thank you for appearing before the board today.
Thank you.
Sir?
Hello. Morning.
Morning, sir. If you can state your name.
Sure. My name is Bill Bryant.
And what would you like to share with the board, sir?
First of all, I want to say I'm not related to Stephen Bryant. I have a single last name, but it was truly coincidental. I work for Safety Services Company. I also have been here about 7 years, and I'm a department manager. So I've known Stephen. I knew of him for a couple of years. He didn't work for me, but he's worked directly for me for 3 years. And in that time, I've grown to know him quite a bit. In fact, we have a room that's about 12 by 14 or so, and it's just the two of us in that room. So we've worked side by side for 3 years, so I know him very well. And I can tell you, you know, my background was not, I didn't come from outside or anything like that, or, you know, Safety Services prides themselves on being kind of a second chance company. But really the way that it starts is we have a call center that operates out of the prison. So we've cycled through many people that, if they do pretty well outside, they'll get a chance to come work with us in Tempe in our office, our main office. So about 100 people in Tempe. But I can tell you that I didn't come from that background. I came from a professional background, and where I come from, you do a background check, and if someone had a convicted felon, they weren't even a candidate to work there. That's how business works. I mean, I know the recidivism rates and things like that as well. I looked up myself, and I can understand the concern. It's a competitive market, just like anywhere else. You apply for a job, there's 600 applicants. If then you start going through, is there any reason to not choose someone? Okay, guess what? This guy's a bit compelling to him. So that's just the truth of how things operate. So it was really different from me. I certainly had some trepidation about going to a company where they had so many convicted felons. I'd say half the people there, out of the 100 that are in Tempe, came from that group. So they're actually had served time. They're incarcerated before. So that was certainly difficult for me at first to get used to. And I'll say that we, as a company, saw all the things that can go wrong with that. We've had people that were arrested even at our site, where they were apprehended. We've had to fire people for drugs. We've had people literally have fist fights in the parking garage. I mean, it's for a parking lot. I mean, so I see statistically where these are all the reasons why you wouldn't want to work with someone who's a convicted felon. But I'll say that Stephen has pretty much single-handedly changed my opinion about that. Before, I would say, if I were starting a company, I would never employ someone who was convicted prior. But I'll say that Stephen, in the 3 years that I've worked with him directly, I've never felt unsafe. He's always controlled himself very well. And he really impressed me on many different levels. And he's always been very driven. And that's the thing that really stands out to me. He's driven to improve himself. And I certainly take notice of that. And I really can't understate that. I mean, that's what I see as the best quality of him is that he's not going to be settled with who he is. He's constantly trying to improve himself and be a better contributor, not just to work, but into society. So, I consider him more than just another employee or another person I direct, but I've seen him as a friend as well. I would absolutely trust him. I don't see any signs whatsoever of any kind of anger, things like that. And another thing that stands out too is that a lot of times when you go outside and you see people just leaving for work, all these guys that had been incarcerated before all hang out, you know, cars and stuff, and I feel unsafe. I mean, I wouldn't want to approach them, but I don't feel I would see him at all. He always comes out, he would just go directly to his car, he doesn't hang out with anybody, and he goes directly, directly home. There's no sign whatsoever to me that this guy was, you know, has the past that he has. Yeah, you know, I can't speak at all of what happened or any other time before this time, but I can tell you that not only is he a quality employee, where he's always there, he's never late, and I can absolutely count on him, but he's really kind of become my right hand in the department itself. So I see him as a major contributor, not only to work, but also I see what he's done outside too. You know, I don't see any flaws in how he is as a person. And I really respect the idea that he's really driven to improve himself. And I think it's a quality that I'd like to share with the board. So I guess pretty much all I really have to say, sir.
Thank you. That was a very strong statement. Any questions from the board?
What is the name of the company?
Oh, Safety Services? Pardon me, sir.
What is the name of the company, sir?
I work for a safety services company in Tempe.
And how long have you been with the company?
7 years.
Okay, and he's been with you for how long? 2 or 3 years?
3 years. He's worked directly with me for 3 years.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Before we leave, I do want to thank your business for allowing this opportunity to recognize that it's a good piece of avoiding issues like recidivism. It is me. Thank you.
Yep, thanks very much.
Thank you. I think we have a support on the phone. Ma'am, are you still on the phone?
Yes. I had to take it off on mute, sorry.
Well, thank you for doing that, by the way. We get background noise sometimes. It's awful. You can state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Diana Block. I am currently a unit supervisor for parole. Previously, I was a parole officer, and I did supervise Mr. Bryant for approximately a year while he was on minimum supervision.
Ma'am, 1 second. Didn't we have another
supervisor? Okay, we had the supervisor.
Just the supervisor?
We had the other one come on. I thought...
My sister.
It's a sister?
Officer Bullock or Supervisor Bullock, if you just give us a moment.
Okay.
I want to hear from Mr. Bryant's sister first. So, ma'am, if you're hearing me, can you state your name for the record?
Sure, my name is Angela Ginter.
Thank you, Ms. Ginter. And what would you like to share with the board today?
Well, I've been in a big process of, a big part of Steve's process of being able to get out of prison, get paroled, and be his support and his cheerleader in the back corner. He's really come a long way since he was 19 years old and you know, took a life at 19 years old. I mean, that's very horrific, and he knows what he did was horribly, horribly wrong. I'm asking for him to be able to be released completely because I'm in Washington State with our brother who is an end-stage renal patient who is an amputee. Our mother is actually quite elderly as well, and she has got health issues. I've been recently diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, so things are a little bit more a little bit more difficult for me to handle with the family up here. I'm not able to do as much for them as I have been able to, and it would be, you know, wonderful if Stephen were to be able to travel to at least assist with visiting them. We all live in the same town. Stephen did come up for a Christmas visit, which was really phenomenal. It's been the first time in 30 years that he'd been up here, and first time he'd met my children. And, you know, he has gone to school. He has gone to his meetings that he's supposed to. He spent a year in a halfway house. He got out of the halfway house, spent a year in an apartment. After that year, he bought his condo. He's worked for the same company since he was released. They offered him, they were one of the four companies that offered him a position directly out of prison when he was paroled. And he has moved up in that company as well. He has maintained a relationship with Diane. She just had the flu that she was talking about, she almost died. She was in intensive care and just had to go to a nursing facility to learn to take care of herself again. Stephen was there every single day after work to help take care of her. He has a large, compassionate heart, and what happened 30 years ago was a travesty. It was a horrible, and it was a horrific crime, and it was horrible that the situation that happened, that somebody had to lose their life. I'm not by any means discounting that, you know, it was a horrible thing for his family to lose him as well. But Stephen has paid his restitution. He has done everything that he's been asked to do. And we're just asking for him to be able to be on this release so that he can continue moving on with his life.
Thank you, ma'am. We ask that the board members, if they have any questions for you. Okay, thank you, ma'am. You want to stay on the phone? We'll continue with the hearing.
Thank you.
So do we have any more supporters for Mr. Bryant in the room? Just a good faith attempt here. Thank you. I think at this point, I want to move along with victims' representatives. So we have victim services in the room. Do you have a particular order that you would like to move?
Yes.
Okay. Ma'am, do you wish to speak to him? If you could approach the podium. Thank you very much. And you may have spoken before the board before, but if you can state your name. Have you spoken to the board?
No.
Okay. Can you state your name for the record?
Okay, my name is Rachel Bryant. I am the victim's daughter. I work here with my brother and my daughter. I'm a little conflicted. I'm not sure if I want to address the point yet or if I want to make the statement that I had actually prepared. So I think I'll start with the statement that I prepared on behalf of my family, and then I will move on to the points that I want to present to the board to make sure that I take into consideration. So good morning, my name is Rachel. I'm the youngest daughter of Douglas Warren Munson, and this is why we're here today. Not to absolute discharge of Stephen Bryant, but to make sure that justice is upheld for Douglas Warren Munson and the family that he will never get to meet or know. The man that has forever lost his life at the hands of another, that other is Stephen Bryant. Why, 31 years later, we still don't know why. I don't think I will ever personally hear an explanation of why our fathers tore their lives. I don't think any reason would ever be acceptable. No apologies ever offered, and honestly, at this point, all these years later, none of it is necessary. We have long ago accepted this fate, and even though we have forgiven us to not live with the anger and hatred in our hearts, we recognize it is equally important to not forget. We have a legacy of Douglas Warren Munson. It is our job to make sure he's never forgotten. Character is a true test of a man's character is what he does when no one is watching. And when no one is watching, Stephen Bryant tried to get rid of murder, literally. And he almost did. No remorse, no surrender, no sense of guilt. Didn't even bother to pay restitution, which I can address that later. These are all actions of a person that shows no remorse. What was Stephen Bryant's character after he committed his heinous crime? He ran, he pointed fingers. He tried to blame innocent people. He did turn himself in, he was caught. I look around me today, I sit in this room, to hear a man plead for his rights. What about dad's rights? What about the right for him to meet all his grandchildren and great-grandchildren he has? Those rights were taken from him, because why? He was mean? So So maybe you offer a bribe to a complete stranger, most people who pay this in kindness. My father's record, loss of his life. Loss of his family, loss of his grandbabies. Stephen Bryant was real. He has it. He is no longer in prison. He gets to walk the streets. He gets a family. He gets to have a family. He gets to see them grow. No one is taking that away from him. We are just asking that society never turns their back on this man. We teach children at a young age there are consequences for their actions. These are kids. Never take your eyes off a man that will shoot you in the back. Drag your body into a forest to hide it. Drive off with your worldly possessions. Then run till he can run no longer. This is his character. This is what he did when no one was watching. On behalf of my mother and sisters, my dad's sisters, and all of his family, we ask absolute discharge to be denied. Not indefinitely, we're just asking for you to extend that longer. We're asking for more time. He's received every benefit a prisoner can ask for. He has been granted home arrest on his very first parole board hearing, which until was not very usual. One day later, he was granted general parole. And now he's trying to get absolute discharge. All this for a life sentence. We feel that he needs to be monitored longer. So, some of the things that he has said, I think we need to not take our eyes off the prize or the situation, restitution being one of them. To our knowledge, and it was addressed with the board 4 years ago, restitution has not been paid. He was requested at that time 4 years ago to prove restitution has been paid, and to this date, we have not received any proof that restitution is paid.
Ma'am, we will ask the parole supervisor about that later in the hearing, so thank you for that.
Okay. So yeah, that was a little okay. He stated that it was an accident or not. This was not, I guess, in our eyes, an accident. You don't pull a man's gun from his car, and you don't shoot him in the back, and then you don't drag his body into a forest to hide it, and then take off with his stuff. When he was arrested, he was quoted that the shooting was just like shooting a bear. This is someone that was very cognitive of the fact that he had done what he did. By his own words, he too worries about himself, of the drug and alcohol use that he was drinking and the drugs in his use. So it's great that he is being monitored now, but I also worry what happens when his freedom is released. You start slipping into that lifestyle again, and if he snapped like that during an incident of drinking all night long, I don't know what would happen again, and I don't think that we're ready to try to see what would happen by letting him go. Sorry. Another point that he made was he's still anxious and proud. As the victim's advocate pointed out, counseling is available to parolees, and he is perfectly capable of getting that counseling. And it just goes to show that he needs continued monitoring until these issues are resolved with him. He should be able to walk into a crowd and not feel that anxiety snapping. And that's scary. That's so scary. And a little just a little shocked to hear that it took him years to really kind of come to terms with when he felt that what he did was wrong. If I believe I heard correctly, he said 10 years. Most people know that they do these things and not moment. Anyone can be hit by being monitored. They can do what they need to do and they can play the part. And I just don't think that we're ready as his family and as a society to leave this man unchecked. We're just not ready. So we ask that the board really take that into consideration. I thank you for your time. I thank you for your consideration. Does anyone have any questions for me?
I'm overwhelmed, but looking for such a detailed statement on numerous levels to include your current concerns. Well, thank you for appearing before the board.
Okay, thank you.
To make sure, do you have anyone else? Most wishes. No further statements?
No.
Okay. What I will do at this point is now ask parole supervisor Bullock if she wants to share anything with the board. So, ma'am, are you still on the phone?
Yes, I'm sorry.
And could you state your name again?
Yes, my name is Diana Bullock. I'm currently a unit supervisor for parole, and I was previously Mr. Bryant's supervisor and parole officer for about a year back in 2017.
And we may ask you some questions shortly, but what can you show the board right now in general about Mr. Bryant's?
For the time that I've known Mr. Bryant, I've been doing this job for almost 20 years, supervising numerous amounts of people. And with Mr. Bryant, he's been on parole in different aspects for just over 6 years. He hasn't had any violations. He's been compliant with his drug and alcohol testing, with completing the classes and the programs that he was supposed to complete. He hasn't had any police contact. He maintains contact with his supervising officer. He's maintained employment, pays his bills, steady residence, and he's always staying in touch if there's anything going on with him. I understand that this is a serious, serious crime that he did commit, 30 some odd years ago. And what I'd like to state as far as the absolute discharge, if he's granted absolute discharge, it doesn't change the fact that he committed this horrible crime and that he took a life and he destroyed an entire family. Absolute discharge allows him to continue with what he has been doing for the past 6 years while on parole. Mr. Bryant has went from home arrest, where he was on electronic monitoring, to now where he is on minimum supervision, where he is only actually physically seen by a parole officer once every 3 months. He still stays in contact on those off months. And he hasn't really done anything other than being an average citizen in society. He's making decisions to help better his life, change his way of thinking. Now that he's 51 years old, he's understanding that, this is the way that life should have been, rather than when he was younger, age 20, what he had done. I have never seen any problems with Mr. Bryant. And like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. I've seen numerous people who come out that either commit new crimes within a few months or even within a few years. They go back into the drug and the alcohol. Mr. Bryant hasn't done any of that. So I know this is a horrible crime, and there's nothing that he can do or anyone can do to change that. But that's just my standpoint. Like I said, doing this for almost 20 years, Mr. Bryant has been in compliance and actually a model parolee for over 6 years.
Thank you, Officer Bullock. Do we have any questions from other board members? Yes, the other is written off.
Yes, restitution.
Yes, thank you.
Officer Bullock, do you have evidence that the restitution is fully paid?
That I do not. We can always contact the court, but it looks like the sentencing documents just state that he had restitution in the amount of $612, and then he was also supposed to be paying money into victim compensation. The victim compensation, I can attest that he did pay $356 while he was incarcerated, but as far as if he's actually made that restitution with the clerk of court for Yavapai County, we would actually have to contact the court to verify that.
I'm just wondering if it's a situation where the restitution was paid to the court, but the court hasn't gotten to the family. The family is is indicating they haven't received it. So that's the question.
Right, and it specifically says it is to be paid to, I believe it's Ms. Benson.
Right.
So, yeah, whether or not he's actually constantly paid the court and the court just hasn't paid her, that would be something we'd have to clarify with the court.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you. And I have to account for this, Ms. Bullock, that it was a very strong point from the victim's representatives. And it sounds like that it came up at a past hearing and it was never resolved. So I think it is important that be accounted for. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, ma'am. But on the Community Corrections Progress Report, there is a notation of $795 that says amount paid. So I took that as an indication from Community Corrections that it had been paid, and now I'm not so sure.
Okay, and it may have been. I just don't have that information.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Also, there was, I think, an appropriate reference from one of the victim's representatives that he wasn't doing well with the crowds in the beginning, and I know you've been monitoring this case. Was that ever, did that come up in the past?
None of that had come up with me while I was supervising him. But that might have been early on when he was released back in 2013. I actually didn't start supervising him until 2017, which was 4 years after he'd been out on parole already.
Thank you, ma'am. And thank you for being so honest with the board and correct. Any other questions? Okay. Yes, I have
I hesitate to ask this question, but I feel obligated to ask it. And I certainly appreciate the senior parole officer, honorable senior parole officer, for giving that wonderful report. And I'm just trying to reconcile in my mind, and maybe I should wait until we go into discussion, but I'm trying to reconcile in my mind this great report coming from DOC and the report coming from the Yavapai County Attorney's Office. They're just not the same. I mean, in terms of conclusion, I'm not saying, you know, they're opposed, and I mean, the state is opposing it, and this letter is dated March 23rd, 2019, that I'm looking at, and I'm just trying to reconcile in my mind. How did that happen? I'm just trying to, I believe that's maybe, I'm not going to read the whole thing because of this. The state strongly, very strongly opposed absolute discharge from supervision. And I'm just trying to cover in, you know. I know there's not an answer. We can't answer that, but I just want to put that on this. Just caught my attention. This is a recent letter. If it was, you know, 2 or 3 years old or something, it would be a different story. But it's just recent. Less than a month ago, to be exact. But I'm not asking for anybody's anything about it, but it just caught my attention. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Seems that we're getting close to the end of the hearing. So if there's no further information coming from victims' representatives, Mr. Bryant, if you could approach the podium. And again, for the record, state your name.
My name is Stephen Bryant.
We are getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing. So, is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before we go into discussion and deliberate on this case?
If I may,
Can I ask a question of this gentleman here?
I don't see a problem, although I will say that our in-house community corrections hearings officer is not on station for parole hearings, it's for revocations, but...
You have records? Do you have access to the DOC records, the news file?
For exactly what are you requesting?
For the banking records?
I do have, or I did look at it, and it only shows what Ms. Bullock spoke about.
Okay. So you say, if it was that in our...
And thank you for going the extra mile on that, Mr. Turner, I appreciate that.
I was going to say, if it went back far, if that would show, provide the evidence you're looking for in the restitution.
Okay.
Because I paid for it from within prison.
I certainly will take that into consideration, but you can see why we would want some confirmation on that.
Right.
I want to be careful with what I'm going to say here, too. I certainly was one for the board member, not saying that everything is right on that, but it is a factor that I have to look at.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you again for allowing me to come here and speak in front of you folks today. I'm hoping that you see that I can be a productive member of society. Yes, I made a serious and egregious mistake in the past that cost a man his life. I don't want to minimize that. It's not fair to the victim's family, it's not fair to my family or anybody who's involved in this. I believe that upon being reintegrated into society, I've done, and I believe, what has been reasonably expected of me. Not just on the parole side, but also as far as a member of society. As a member of society, you know, it's my obligation to help people whenever necessary. If I had 1% of the intelligence I have now, or the maturity I have now, we wouldn't be here talking. You know, if I had that back when I was 20, we wouldn't have this conversation right now. Unfortunately, I cannot undo the past. I can only move forward. And so I'm hoping that the testimony and the evidence presented to this panel, to the board today, will convince you that I'm a suitable candidate to be released from parole. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. If you'll just have a seat. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like, Mr. Bryant, that we're speaking with you directly, but as the board discussing the case under the open meeting laws of Arizona, everything we do is in the open. We do not discuss the case ahead of time, nor do we make decisions away from this hearing. So, we'll just remain course. We will make our decision shortly. Thank you. The board is now in discussion. Well, board members, I really do not have a clear outline of what I'm going to begin the discussion with. I took a lot of random notes here today. This is a difficult case. No doubt there is an unbroken lineage of this board. It was the board. I certainly don't undermine the decision that's been made by this board, before my appointment. But to be sure, the board made a tough decision when first considering Homerat and then graduating to regular parole, in as much that it was opposition from victims' representatives, as well as what would seem to be opposition from the Alabama County Attorney's Office. And for me, that always puts on the table a balance that I'm looking for, looking at the whole case,
weighing the totality of the individual who's incarcerated, whether or not in their rehabilitation process, whether or not they can be safely transitioned back to the community under community supervision, versus the interest of justice in and of itself, this board always places public safety first, at least as an ideal, with consideration for victims' rights and inmates' rights, and thus it is a tough decision. I think at this point, Dr. Wright pointed out something that is in my notes, but I think he stated it clearly, or alluded to it clearly, and that is that there is some disparity between the state's position and the county attorney's office, their opposition, versus how Mr. Bryant has been doing under the supervision of his community corrections officer. So I'm having some concerns about the interest of justice in this case, in as much that there is obvious concern from the state's attorney and from the victims. And I will also add that while I believe that Mr. Bryant is on a good trajectory and has shown very good behavior under community supervision, I'm not together sure on where he's at on a personal level. And this is to say, he's doing well, but he had said in his last statement, not to nitpick, that this was a mistake, and I think that murder is far beyond a mistake in terms of accountability. Also, we're not here to retry the case, but his position that the gun just went off is uncomfortable for me. I would like to see, or at least be comfortable with the accounting of the event. I wasn't there, I do not know what is in Mr. Bryant's heart and mind, and I do not want to take away that he's done well on regular parole. But I'm not sure, if I look at the whole of this case, if I have arrived at the place where I think it's appropriate to vote in the favor of absolute discharge, considering the weight of this crime. And that's well being the discussion, and I do apologize for kind of walking through that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I think Mr. Bryant's doing great. I mean, I think he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. And the thing I'm wrestling with is I don't think it's unreasonable for the victims to ask for a little bit more time. I just don't think that's an unreasonable request. When Mr. Bryant only has to go into the parole office four times a year and just make a phone call the other once, and if he does want to travel, he can apply for a travel. So I'm not thinking that that's an unreasonable request. And since the original home arrest was just granted in 2013, for this length of a sentence, I'm kind of with you. I'm with you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. And to continue the discussion, I do want to thank you for being so direct on that, because I'm very sensitive to where the victim's representatives are at right now, and I want to account for that. And I'm like working through it, and I think you just hit the nail right on the head. So thank you for that. Yes, the Honorable Mr. David.
Thank you, Mr. Canales. I'd just like to say one thing about the restitution issue for both sides. The restitution issue could be resolved whether Mr. Bryant's on parole or home arrest or even at absolute discharge, because it's a core amount of money. There is a responsibility, even if he was granted absolute discharge, the courts would still make sure that he's taken care of. I will say also, if the money gets to the courts, it's normally distributed very accurately. But that's not to say that the money wasn't paid by Mr. Bryant, but every other month I get a restitution check, like clockwork. So the issue could simply be that somewhere or another between the prison system and the court, it's been mislaid and not sent to the victim. So I don't think that, for me, that's absolutely not an issue in this hearing. But I look back to the issue of, it keeps coming up, maturity. When I was 20 years old, I became intoxicated on a few occasions and had some very serious arguments with people. And several of them were in areas where guns were readily available. And neither party or any of the parties involved decided that this argument should be resolved by shooting somebody. So I can't accept maturity as a factor in an excuse or a good reason for why something like this will occur. It takes a conscious effort to pick up the rifle and point it at something and shoot it. It also takes a very conscious effort to drag the body off into the forest to hide it. So, and with the county attorney's letter of objection, the idea that the plea agreement was based on the elimination of the death sentence, we see that a lot. And so, I 32 years is a very long time, but eternity is what the victim was sentenced to. So, that relationship isn't something that I'm concerned with this point in time. And a lot of things are considered in a lot of different cases, and I think just the overall circumstance here, of the offense, everything after the offense, and up to this point, Mr. Bryant is to be commended for doing a good job. He was behaving himself well in prison. He has, as far as anybody can determine, behaved well since he's been out. But at this point in time, I'm not comfortable at all with an absolute discharge for Mr. Bryant. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Neal, Dr. Rice.
Thank you, sir. I think that, yes, he's done an outstanding job. I have to give him credit for that. I do feel that it is necessary for time to be considered. You know, all this has happened real fast, faster than usual. I also think that we always have to take into consideration the victims, and I think that's just where I come down on it. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Mr.
I apologize. I think no one can correct me, but the issue of him traveling to California to take care of his girlfriend's elderly mother, there is the option of interstate compact, which if you've been going to California and spending time taking care of somebody, the issue of employment work that always comes up, but interstate compact would be a solution to that, to spend any lengthy amounts of time. And I don't know the rules for the parole office, but I would imagine travel permits for a period of more than one day are issued under circumstances when one takes such travel. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Neal, any further input from my colleagues? I'm going to make a motion. And because of the uniqueness of an absolute discharge, I want to make sure that I check the right boxes when we get to that time. But for now, I'll say my motion is to deny absolute discharge, and I lost this. We're continuing the present form and denying absolute discharge. Is that the right language?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so my motion is to deny absolute discharge and to
continue on to our rule, and that is the motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Gary.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, you informed by the Honorable Dr. Wright, Mr. Rittenhouse, again, boxes of checking, please type Brad in, for the sake of continue on general parole, his portfolio, but please type denied, is 414, absolute discharge from supervision, and you may reply in the future. Reasons for denial are as follows: serious environmental offense, loss of human life, trouble to the victim.
If not, then I'll be going to bring this hearing to a close. Thank you, sir.